Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Buonasera, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and a man who has been undertaking a part-time PhD in what sport should Adama Traoré play for the last 3 years. Nathan, what are your findings so far?
He might be the most athletically gifted human being of all time, and he uses it to be pretty good. And when I say pretty good, I do mean within the context of elite football, pretty good at elite level football, when he could instead be the greatest ever at several other sports instead. Windy, would you take 38-1-0 wins?
Absolutely not.
We don't need 38. I've done the maths. We just need 29 more. That's it.
Would you take 31-1-0 wins and, was it 6-7 nil-nil draws?
Look, why not? Why not? Why the devil not? I'll take that. Let's just get it over and done with. So much to say about Spurs this week. It's been a very mixed week. To start off with, just a shout out to our chaos children on the Discord. It's been a fun week on the Discord, which is one element of our Patreon subscription. So behind the paywall, we have this Discord server with multiple channels. One of them is gaming, and we've got a big community of people who are into gaming, and they've been playing a lot of Knockout City, which is a dodgeball game, as I understand it. Rocket League. Nathan, I know you're a keen Rocket League player. And then this week, in particular, they've been getting into GeoGuessr and Scribble. I watched in for a bit of GeoGuessr, and oh my goodness, it's like... I think you need to play it for a while to get into the swing of things. I was struggling. It was moving too quickly for me. And Scribble is very fun. Not so much on a Mac trackpad, as I found out last night.
That's just an excuse for your terrible drawing skills and ability.
I mean, I'm a terrible artist. That's true. I'm a terrible artist,
but that's not the skill. The skill is like being able to communicate through your bad drawing. And that's different.
Yeah. To be fair, I'm a good guesser, so I make up for my terrible drawing.
I get very annoyed when people draw what I consider to be incorrectly, so it really throws me off.
It is a lot of fun. And also the bot that we've got on there can host music quizzes, so there's been a lot of music quizzing as well. So shout out to the Chaos Children when they behave themselves. They're a pretty good bunch. Also, friend of the pod, Greg Jenner's podcast, You're Dead to Me, is back for season 4. And also his book, Dead Famous, is out on paperback or ebook for 99p for August, which is a bargain. Greg is lovely. He's very talented. Please support him by buying his book and listening to his podcast. Also, the track we put at the end of the last podcast went down really well. Our friend Tim's song from his band, Big Bad. So we're going to put another track at the end of this episode. Hope you enjoy that as well. Let's get stuck into Spurs, lads. I think we'll start with Wolves. We'll go away from the chronological order because I think there's more to say about Wolves, and then we can dip into some Passus de Ferreira.
Close enough.
Sorry for mucking up so badly last time. Wolves first. Bardi, 1-0 win. What are you thinking?
Everything that I was concerned about in the Man City win, as great as it was, kind of came to light here. That our inability to really control the ball and control games was shown up, and our susceptibility to a high press was pretty bad. But it's a 1-0 win, and perhaps I just got my prophecy wrong with my manager. Perhaps the real Portuguese mastermind who's going to lead us to the title is Nuno Espírito Santo. Maybe he's the guy. He's the proper 1-0 merchant.
I completely agree with what you've just said, but I think we do need to sort of give Nuno a chance. It's so early, isn't it? Like we're 3 games in, but it's two games really, you know, playing our full strength side. And a lot can change. And we did see in pre-season a different style to what we saw against Wolves. But I completely share your thoughts, Bardi, that there were some items of concern, shall we say.
I'm sure Nathan will get more into it, but there's certain things which are a bit of a red flag, which I'm not sure how we can fix with this current squad. I don't see many more options in that midfield. I mean, Dele is quite the athlete now. He's turned into this wonderful box-to-box player who's great to watch. But yeah, I don't think he gives us that kind of balance in midfield. And I'm a bit concerned about Højbjerg as well. But I'm fully team Skip, and I'm not racist, but I'm fully team Skip. I guess we'll touch on that as well. That it's all about white supremacy, that people is supporting Skip.
Oh, I see.
Let's do it now then, as you brought it up. Jesus, Bardi, you've thrown me under a bus here.
But let's go tactics first, and then come back to worshipping Skip and what that means as us as individuals.
Okay, no, that's fair. So what we saw in this game, what we said last week, or what I said last week after the City game, was this was Man City. This was not the blueprint for how we'll play the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. We'll see a completely different style when we play against a team where we can have at least 50% of the ball. And it did not seem to be the case that we chose to do that. We played the same style, same blueprint. We chose to have not so much of the ball. And I think that clearly was a choice. And what was interesting, actually, Wolves, who under Nuno have been a sort of counter-attacking side, who plays a sort of quite a low block, suddenly under their new coach, is it Bruno Lage? I want to say it's Lage. They played a high line and they pressed, and I was really surprised to see sort of how quickly they changed their team style. Anyway, we played this narrow 4-3-3 once again, with Bergwijn and Lucas very close to Son. Dele, Skip and Højbjerg across the midfield once again. Again, really narrow, but the outer sort of midfield players are tasked with closing down the fullbacks when they come forward. We defended fairly deep and packed out the penalty area. At one point, I counted 8 players in the penalty box. Very Mourinho, I would say. Nathan, how are you feeling about the tactics used so far? Do you think this is just the style now, or do you think this is Nuno, you know, grinding out the results whilst he coaches a new system?
Okay. I mean, yes, obviously this is very early on, and there are players to come back in, and there's adjusting to the system, and there's adaption from both the players and then the coaches, and every other caveat you can possibly imagine. But this is Nuno ball. This is kind of what it is. It's attritional football. And when it works, it's glorious. And when it doesn't work, it's unglorious, which I guess is any football at all, obviously, to an extent. But I think that this really takes it to an extreme in terms of, like, you're making direct attack after direct attack, right? When you have the ball, and it's kind of what we talked about before under Mourinho, but it's not the exact same. When you have the ball, you accelerate to 100 miles an hour immediately. And when those attacks work, they're brilliant and you love it, and it's the exhilarating football, and it's exactly what your dar wants, because everyone's passing forwards, right? But when they don't, when it doesn't come off, the opposition get their turn with the ball, and if they want to slowly work it, and if they want to put you under pressure, if they want to pin you back, you are giving them the opportunity to at least give them a try at that. And when it's against City, everyone's happy, because any counterattack you get against City is a blessing, and you're grateful, and we won, and that and that's great. But it's gonna happen like that sometimes, and sometimes we will still dominate. Like what we saw against Passos, right, is we dominated possession. We still had a bunch of direct attacks, even though they weren't fruitful. So there's still that middle ground where, like, you're trying things, they're not working off, but you win the ball back pretty quickly anyway, and you cycle it about the back, and then you play it long, and it's still not fruitful. But I don't know. Yes, it can get better, but this is very much the blueprint, and we will see this at the beginning with Nuno. We will see this at whenever the end is with Nuno, because that is what his football is like. And sometimes you're going to love it, and sometimes you're going to hate it. But again, that's not really any different from any football, I guess.
Okay, yeah, I mean...
We're going to have Windy's some good time, Windy, and you're going to like him, and you're going to see some footballers so you like.
That's the thing, isn't it? He's likeable, so it does change things somewhat. It is what everything I feared, though, about Nuno. It's why when we were speaking about new managers back at the start of the summer, Nuno would not have been high up any of our lists. And I think he's a fine manager, and I think he's probably going to improve some of our players along the way. But I also, he's not going to play the style of football I want to see us play. He's not going to play the style of football that I think gets the best out of our obviously talented players. But if he does okay, if he has us punching our weight, then we can make top four, and that'll be just fine. So, I mean, it's similar to sort of what we've just been saying, but Alec Depkrinsky says, how are we feeling about Nuno's substitutions/tactical tweaks? It worries me that we were obviously playing on the back foot for almost the entire first half, only to come out for the second half with the exact same game plan. The subs also did not seem ideal. We were clearly getting overrun in the middle of the park, so we brought on Lo Celso and Kane, which in theory would help, but they basically just occupied the same spaces as the players they replaced, with Kane maybe dropping a bit deeper than Son. And to be honest, I would say also Lo Celso dropping a bit deeper than Lucas, which I think made a big difference, if I'm completely frank. I think, you know, Lo Celso had an impact in that half, and I would say Lo Celso had more of an impact than Kane for me. And I think it was just the fact that he was that, you know, 10 yards deeper than Lucas as a starting position, able to receive the ball and then progress it and make things happen. Bardi, were you worried about the fact that we didn't really change anything in the second half?
Oh, I thought maybe Lo Celso would come on. I thought maybe when Lo Celso come on, Ali would move a bit further forward. I was just a little bit off, maybe take off Bergwijn. He didn't change anything, and that was a concern, because throughout the first half you could see what Wolves' plan was. I think what helped us was Traore running out of gas. I think he was gone after 55, 60 minutes, and he had that one-on-one opportunity. Other than that, he didn't do much in the second half. So I think that was a blessing. But there are positives to be taken from that. I thought Sanchez had a couple of wobbly moments, but him and Dier seemed to be pretty sturdy. I thought Reguilón had a good game. He made a good few interceptions, but I am concerned about our inability to control a match. I would like to see a little bit more from our midfield. I would like to see them sometimes being a bit braver. I would like to see them just being a bit closer to our forward line. Yeah, if this is what we're going to get for the rest of the season, I think there's going to start to be a few complaints, because I don't think, we, as we well know, 1-0, 1-0, 1-0 is not a sustainable way to win to win games and see a season out.
Well, the thing is, Mourinho was playing his way behind closed doors, and I think that's one thing, but playing that way with a full Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, I do think changes things significantly. And as you say, Bardi, I don't think the fans are going to guzzle that down without complaint. I think there will be some moans and groans along the way. In this game, I thought, like you, broadly the defenders did well. Obviously, Dier had his one little incident, was let's not spend too much time on that. It can happen. It was frustrating, but it can happen. I thought Sanchez really struggled for the first 15-20 minutes with Adama, as did Tanganga. Both of them were just getting ripped to shreds. But then, you know, lots of players will get ripped to shreds by Adama. He's an incredible dribbler, so I'm not going to worry too much about that. Yeah, I thought Bergwijn was really good. I thought Bergwijn was really bright, had a really promising second half. That, to me, that was the one tweak we did make in the second half. So in answer to Alex's question, I think my issue in the first half was that our front three were not making runs in behind. And I think that's a real problem if we're going to play this system. It relies on them making regular runs in behind, and, you know, the midfield players need something to pick out. That wasn't happening. Second half, it happened a lot more. I can think of two occasions straight off the top of my head. One where Hjoibier won the ball on around halfway, and Son straight away was on his bike and he was put through. And it was the one where he tried that little chipped cutback, which he claimed a penalty for. And the other one is where Lloris had the ball in his hands and Bergwijn was just off. like a rocket, and Lloris picks out this fantastic pass over the top, ends up with a chance being created from a Lloris kick, which is something we don't see very often. And yeah, Bergwijn, really impressive at carrying the ball forward and committing players and making things happen. But it wasn't a game that made me think, wow, this is a Spurs team I'm going to enjoy watching this season. And I think a lot of that has to do with the tactical choices rather than the personnel.
I still don't know whether it is this tactical choices or is the personnel, because this is the second manager that has done this, and I've always thought I thought Mourinho used the players' mistakes as a way to get himself out of a hole on occasion, but I'm still concerned about our players' ability to play a possession based football. I don't think they can do it. Perhaps they can do it against Pacos, but then we were toothless. But then we didn't have the forward line playing. Then against these guys, we had our forward line playing, but I just thought our centre midfield was, you know, it just the least press-resistant midfield I've ever seen. It would have been nice had we had a peak Dembele in there, or a fit and functioning Ndombele in there, to see what could happen. But you press our midfield and it crumbles. And then you get through our crumbling midfield and you're on top of Sanchez and Dier, and they're just never going to pass their way out of any kind of trouble.
Okay, let's use that comment as a launch pad to talk some Skip. Matt D from our Discord server says, assuming he can get consistently fit, I think Lo Celso in for Skip could really help us get into games better. No dig at Skip, I just think Lo Celso offers more in getting out after we win the ball. So at least against weaker sides, I'd like to see Lo Celso, Dele, Højbjerg as our midfield three. What is your ideal midfield three, assuming Ndombele isn't an option? Does it vary based on the level of opponent? The point that Bardi made earlier about white supremacy, a bit tongue-in-cheek, is a discussion that came up today. So a couple of prominent Spurs tweeters have come out in the last 24 hours and said they thought Skip was bad in both games so far. And Joel Wertheimer, who was one of them, who I think is really an excellent follow and someone who I enjoy reading his stuff, he kind of mentioned that Dan Kilpatrick had kind of, and Alistair Gold had overrated Skip in their match ratings. And then someone else joined in, I can't remember who it was now, and sort of mentioned that this is the privilege you get when you're a young white footballer compared to other footballers. And look, I do think there's something in that. I've seen the way the conversation has been around Dele for the last 2 years, and I've seen how it's been around the Ndombele, and yeah, absolutely, I think there's something in it. But I actually thought Skip played okay in this game and pretty well in the City game after the first 10 minutes. And, you know, I really rate Joel's opinions on Spurs. And Michael Cayley was one of the other people who said similar about Skip. And I rate his opinions too. So I went back and I watched Skip on Wyscout, his highlights from the Wolves game.
Using
up your minutes again. And it was all good stuff. Like, I don't know what I'm not seeing that they are about Skip. What I'm seeing is really good screening and covering runs. Oh my goodness, one of my main complaints about our midfield over the last 2 years has been Wink, and Sissoko absolutely unable and unwilling to track runners, and Skip does it so diligently, so effectively. When he gets the ball, he's demanding it off centre-backs, he's taking it in tight spaces, so a lot of the time he was in the middle of this rhombus of Wolves players, he was still taking it and using himself as a pivot to change the angle of attack. To progress the ball, he was doubling up on Adama when he could, made a couple of really useful double ups and screens there. It honestly, like, there were a couple of times he got run past. One of them, Adama was running back towards his own goal and it wasn't an issue. Another, Adama kind of goes shoulder to shoulder with him and Skip forces him into Tanganga's zone in the right back. And there was one more where he got run past where he, like, a player made a mistake and he had to commit. And I think it was Moutinho nutmegged him. And honestly, like, these are not things that are worrying to me. And I thought Skip had a pretty solid game. My issue, and I think Bardi's already touched on this, is not Skip and not Højbjerg, but it's the combination of both of them being in the same three-man midfield. And I think that is restrictive. I think Højbjerg is not suited to this role he's playing in at the moment. Like, he just doesn't progress the ball well enough to play that role to Skip's right. He's too conservative. And he's not a quick thinker all the time. So I think they need to be competing for the central midfield spot. And that, I'm fine with that. And then Lo Celso comes in alongside and suddenly our midfield is a whole lot better. So that's where I am. But I'm interested. But I mean, Bardi, you've been nodding along. You like Skip too.
I really like Skip. I like the way he gets around the pitch. I like the way he gets his foot in. I like even the way he distributes the ball. His bravery. I think he's been. I agree. He had a wobbly 10 minutes against City, but then that happens to everybody. I thought against Wolves, he covered a lot of ground and did a crucial role. And I do think the balance is the problem with our midfield at the moment. And I agree that he can't play alongside Højbjerg, but then I think Skip should start. I would start Skip in every game. My concern is Lo Celso, and I'm starting to be a little bit worried about him. He just seems to make bad decisions quite a lot. He seems quite restrictive in his passing. He didn't have a good game in Portugal. I don't think he played well against Wolves, and he's not someone that's coming back from a long-term injury. He did play the whole Copa, so I don't know. I'm starting to worry about Lo Celso.
How about you, Nathan? How are you feeling about the midfield issues?
We're playing this direct football, and it's kind of difficult because it's like if you bring in like Ndombele or Lo Celso for Højbjerg and or for Skip, and then either one of Skip or Højbjerg is still the deepest player, that player who is like, again, neither of them are like absolute cloggers, both of them have played games as number 8, but neither of them are like, you know, Busquets, right? Neither of them are like going to absolutely make the game from that position. And it's like, if you bring in Lo Celso and Ndombele to be the other 8, it's like, okay, sometimes they're going to come towards the play and they're going to help dictate things, but there's still going to be quite a lot of strain on the deepest midfielder. Now, maybe you can run something where like the idea is that Ndombele comes in directly for Skip in that role and Højbjerg remains a defensive 8 and Ndombele is the deepest midfielder he receives from the centre backs and tries to run the game from there, and then Højbjerg does the defensive work in front of him. And maybe that's sort of more of the idea, but they're always going to be sort of a lot asked of our midfielders. And I don't know if like Saar is seen as necessarily an answer to that. It's kind of hard to rate his passing because he plays for like a bad team, basically. But anyway, that's not until next season anyway, if that's going to happen. So I don't know. I think Nuno puts a lot on his number 6, a lot defensively and a lot in possession. And Azar, you know, Winks is a good passer, I think. That's controversial, but Winks is a good passer and a bad defender. Skip and Højbjerg, good defenders, not so great at passing. Not terrible, obviously, but not like brilliant. So it's kind of a tricky one. On the general point, though, I think that like people do assume that white academy players are technical and creative and skillful, and black academy players are like runners and cloggers and everything else. So 100%. I don't think that's completely invalid. I'm sure that the Skip is probably slightly over-celebrated for technical ability based on his race, because that's always what happens. But I don't think that Skip is like some like bumbling like idiot who like can't control the ball or move off the ball and stuff like that. So, I mean, to an extent, like even with our most brilliant technical midfield, it's always going to be a little bit this way, because that's the way that Nuno's teams play. I don't know. The criticisms aren't unwarranted, but I do think they're harsh.
Yeah. The other thing to say about Skip is he's 20. It's his first season in the Premier League. We can expect some growth across the season. I certainly expect a lot of growth across the season. But so far, like, I don't see anything to be worried about. His receiving of the ball is excellent. You know, if you watch him carefully, he is so unfussy in his technical receiving of the ball.
Sure.
It's out of his feet in one or two touches maximum, and like he's releasing the ball quickly. There's a lot of first-time passes going on, and that I like that a lot. I think that will help as the season goes on, and I certainly think it will help once Lo Celso is more established, if Lo Celso becomes more established again. Just a quick mention of Dele, because his first touch in the box of the season results in him winning a penalty, which he then dispatches well. That was really nice to see, because there has been this concern that we don't want Dele to lose all his running beyond capabilities, and to see him sort of time and run so well, and Reguilón pick him out with a fantastic part, really creative pass from Reguilón, was not an easy pass to see. That gave me a lot of hope that Dele can still kind of hit the box at the right time, even from this slightly deeper position. And I thought he had a very strong game. Again, Dele, really, really impressed. Lots of unselfish screening work.
I think with the right two next to him, I think he could really do something in this role.
He seems... in all of his post-match interviews, he seems so focused as well. Like, he just seems so intense. And that's I'm really pleased to see that he's just in a good place with his football right now, because he's a very good player and we need him to be.
Well, he's got an opportunity now to establish himself as one of the senior pros at the club. We've lost a few older players. He's now like mid-age for a footballer.
Yeah.
There's all the doubt around Kane. There's Son has clearly established himself as like the number one. He would never be like an alpha, but as the number one player. And then there's a role there for Dele to step up and almost become like a de facto leader.
Mm-hmm.
And he seems to be thriving in that, and long may it continue. I had my doubts about him. We've got our charity bet. I don't know if you mentioned it, but I would love him to smash those stats and me give money to charity.
Yeah, we've not mentioned this yet, have we? It's I think Dele will get 12 or more goals and assists. We're not including Europa Conference League, and Bardi does not, so one down.
Well, I'm setting him a challenge. I would like him to make me pay up.
Cool. Let's touch on Pasos de Ferreira. Jesus Christ, what an absolutely horrendous performance. And look, it's one of those things where in retrospect, of course, it was horrendous. An 11 that had never played together, probably never even played on the same team in training together, to be honest. Complete change. Also a new system, so we've seen 4-3-3 throughout preseason. We have not seen 3-4-3 or 3-4-2-1. Three new players: Gallini, Ryan Heal, and Romero, and lots of like untried academy players involved as well. Scarlett starting up front, Niall John playing midfield. But for me, the biggest disappointment was that three of the established players were the worst three on the pitch: Matt Doherty, Harry Winks and Giovanni Lo Celso. I thought were absolutely terrible. All of them terrible. And that was really frustrating, because like on a game like that where you've got Scarlett and John in the team, you've got your newbies, you need your kind of established squad players to step up, and especially when they're trying to impress the new manager and kind of put a case in to make themselves first team players. But maybe Pasos were better than we expected, Bardi?
Yeah, they were better than we expected. I don't want to go in on Doherty. We can see the limitations of him and Winks and Lo Celso. I've already mentioned his shameful performance. But I'd like to just talk about Sessegnon. I liked he may have lacked a bit on the final ball, but I liked his industry. I liked his willingness to get forward despite the ball hardly ever getting to him. I loved Romero's front foot way of tackling and just flying into things. I enjoyed that. I think once he gets his timing right and he settles in, I think that could be pretty funny to watch and quite entertaining to watch. And I loved Scarlett's enthusiasm and his determination to keep going. The passes that were going into him were shameful. They were this young child making him go up against these 6 foot monsters as centre backs, chucking the ball up into the air for him, or just lobbing it well over the top for him to chase. It was just, had that been a senior pro, he would have stood there and just bad mouthed the rest of the team. But he kept going and he worked hard. And a couple of times he made the wrong decision, and I didn't like how Lo Celso would blame him for his own failings. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was off. But big up Scarlett, what a nice guy. And I hope he really achieved something. Gallini one-on-one, you know, he might as well have just not been there. That was pretty bad goalkeeping. He didn't stay. He kind of got stuck in this no man's land of goalkeeping around the penalty spot, and he made the decision up for the striker.
Yeah, he offered the corner to the striker and the striker took it. Yeah, I mean, I thought Scarlett, there were a couple of moments where he kind of just barged his opponent off the ball, and I was really impressed with, like, not just the physicality to be able to do that, because, you know, he's a big lad for 17, but it's the bravery. It's like I deserve to be at this level, and I'm not afraid of sort of mixing it with, you know, adult players who might be 10 years 15 years older than me. I really like that. He definitely had something. I think you're right, Bardi, on Sessegnon. I've seen a lot of criticism for Sessegnon's performance, which I think is unfounded. I thought he was like the only one who showed any get up and go. In the second half, at times it felt like he was trying to grab the game by the scruff of its neck and make something happen, basically by himself and driving forward. And I was very impressed with his mentality, because that was a big criticism last season, or the season before last, when he wasn't on loan. We were saying, well, he's a good player, but he seems a bit timid. He seems a bit shy. Yep. We need him to show a bit more oomph. And that, for me, that second half performance had it in spades. And I thought that was why he was probably on the bench against against Wolves, like as a reward for his strong second half showing against Passos. And I hope that, well, I'm thinking Nuno will probably play a slightly stronger team in the return leg, but I'm hoping that he gives the majority of players a chance to redeem themselves, because I think they need that. They need, I mean, and like they need to step up. They really do need to perform better, be more focused, more switched on. Nathan, were you surprised that he switched the formation up for this one?
No. Because whilst this was like possibly the most important game in years for Passos, this was a preseason friendly for us. And I think that we have to like look at that game from that angle, that this was, because we played Arsenal and Chelsea in pre-season and they were high intensity games, and we played our strongest players and we only brought a few rotations off the bench. We played at high intensity, so we still needed that like more experimentation with fringe players returning from international, with younger players, with formation options and stuff like that. And I think that's what this game was, you know, lose 1-0, bring it back home, give them some senior players in the return leg and take it that way. And I didn't enjoy watching it, but I just can't be too upset or have too many strong feelings about this game at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a very rational take, and I agree. They're not a terrible team. They were very disciplined in the second half. They just got behind the ball and they stayed there. They offered nothing, and they got the job done. But we should be able to comfortably beat them at home, right? You know, throw Harry Kane in there if he hasn't transferred by that point, and it's a different story. Play Bergwijn and Lucas, and they will absolutely tear them to shreds. I would hope. But yeah, I think some of the youngsters need to be given a chance to redeem themselves. I'd like to see Niall John start again. I felt really sad for him being taken off at halftime, particularly as I didn't think he was particularly bad. Having said that, I've got no idea why he was playing as one of the two in the 3-4-2-1. Like, he would definitely fit in better in the midfield. That's his natural position. So he was kind of just having this floating role behind Scarlett, which I found peculiar, but whatever. We've not mentioned Carter Vickers, who was just, I mean, he's abject, isn't he?
I mean, I haven't seen defending that bad since, his name now escapes me. I was thinking about the...
Firefly's going to be very cross with you, Nathan.
I know, but I'm putting words in Bardi's mouth. That is my own opinion.
Who was the Portuguese defender that we had back in the day?
Eric Dyer.
Ricardo Rocha.
I haven't seen Eric Dyer. I haven't seen defending that bad since Ricardo Rocha. It was just unacceptable. And imagine Romero in between Ben Davies and Carter Vickers. Carter Vickers looked like he just stumbled upon the football pitch. You'd gone to Hyde Park and you needed a ringer to play, and he was just some chap just walking past. He was terrible. And I can't believe he's been at Spurs, what, 15 years or something?
Yes, and, a long time.
And he keeps getting loans to Championship sides.
He's a good Championship player. And the thing is, like, I do have some sympathy for him. He's not an awful player, but he's not at the level we need him to be at. I mean, he needs to go. But centre-back is a position where you need relationships. Yeah. And it was Carter Vickers, Romero, and then Ben Davies at left centre-back. You know,
yeah.
They've never played together. They didn't know what one another were going to do next. It was a complete mess. The goal was just such a misunderstanding of what was going on. It was awful. It was really awful.
You need a relationship between your head and your feet, though. And that's, I think that's ultimately where it falls down.
Oh, I hope Cameron's not listening.
There's no need for this.
I mean, he is... what we forget is sometimes he is an incredible footballer. He plays for Tottenham Hotspur, and he is one of we go in on these footballers, but they are elite level human beings who are incredibly much better. Carter Vickers is one of the worst centre backs in the world, but he is still 2,000 times better at football than I could even dream of being.
Yeah.
which is such a sad thing to think about.
But he's also better than Pablo Mari.
I don't know.
It's a close thing.
I mean, Lukaku would have absolutely destroyed Carter Vickers. At least Mari kept until just the one goal. Lukaku would have run riot on Carter Vickers.
So let's do transfers. And I think we start off by talking outgoings, and I kind of want to also touch on how well I think Nuno Espirito Santo has handled these situations. So this week we got news that Tongi Ndombele is looking for a way out of Spurs. We'd had hints at this previously, that something was not right and that the club were looking to shift him. And it's become public now. And I'm very sad about this news. I think Ndombele is one of our best midfielders, one of our best players. I think there's so much upside. And I don't want to speculate as to why he wants to go, but things haven't been right for him for a while. He's had a rough time at Spurs since he's been at the club. And it's a big shame. But I think Nuno's handled this situation really like positively and delicately and like played it with a straight bat. And when he's been saying, you know, this isn't the right time for Ndombele to play, I think that's completely correct. If you've got a player who's been vocal about wanting to leave, you can't like involve them from the off. It's just not what you like. How could you? He's not in the right frame of mind. And yeah, I'm impressed with Nuno's management of this in the press conferences and whatnot. Similarly, Kane. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's in such a difficult situation with Kane because, like, he wants Harry Kane to play a part because he's one of the best strikers in the world. So, you know, he includes him on the bench. But he's done this. He's managed it in a way that he's not cut Kane off completely. So if Kane ends up staying, there's still a relationship there. He can still drag it back and create a positive environment for Kane and for him. And that is that's a kind of clever, tactful piece of man management, which I'm really impressed by. We will talk about Kane and what we think is going to happen in this last week. But Bardi and Ndombele, you've been thinking for some time that things aren't right. Were you at all surprised when it became public?
No, not at all. This has been on the cards now for, well, at least this summer, that things aren't right and he's on his way out. If he wasn't, he would have featured at some point during the preseason. He would have got minutes somewhere, no matter how like, kind of lacking match fitness, we would have seen him somewhere. But the problem is, I don't see where he can go. I don't see how we can recoup any money, and I don't see any option for him. He's not going to get the transfer to the clubs that he wants to go to, and I don't see any kind of mid-tier clubs having £30-40 million sitting around to buy him. I'm not sure how this ends. It ends with him leaving, but somebody's going to have to take a hit here, either we in terms of money or him in terms of aspirations.
Mm. So we paid £47 million for Ndombele, rising to 55 or 60 if you believe some reporting is either 55 or 60 based on clauses. And the reporting suggests that we want over 50 for him. And that he wants to go to essentially Barcelona or Real Madrid, or, you know, Bayern Munich is the latest club to be linked. Nathan, do you think this gets resolved, or do you think he ends up staying?
I think staying is a resolving. I think that, like, no one's going to pay us that much cash for him, not right now. But I think we are looking at, like, player swaps for similar sort of valuations and then money going either way, depending on who we can look for, sort of very similar kind of profiles. I don't think it's that likely to happen, but I think part of it is like doing a big show and tell for him that we're like, oh, you want to leave? Okay, we'll do this effort. Oh, we tried, it failed. I guess you can knuckle down. So I suspect that he probably won't go. Obviously I don't want him to go, but I am frustrated with him. I'm more frustrated at the club and the handling of him and the lack of patience and stuff like that. But I am frustrated with him because he could be being more professional about it. He could have done better handling of his fitness over this period of time, but I have more sympathy for them than I have frustration for him. I hope he sticks around. I think he's incredible. And I hope that if we manage to get a swap for him, we get a swap for a similarly brilliant player. But I don't think that there are that many similarly brilliant players, to be honest. I don't know. Ask me again when the window's closed and we'll start to think things through, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's just no point worrying about it or putting too much thought into it, because what will happen will happen. We've got a week left. We'll see how it ends up and then we go from there.
7 to 10 days.
7 to 10 days. Bardi, when Kane came on against Wolves, how were you feeling? Were you conflicted?
No, not at all. Bringing Harry Kane on is always a good thing. He's the one of the best strikers in the world. I don't have a... Yeah, he's a snake and the rest of it, but he remains at Tottenham Hotspur and he remains a player that I want to see play and a player that can do great things for us. Yeah, I thought he did okay when he came on. I want him to stay.
Would you have sung his name?
Probably. It's a bit different. The away fans are a bit different. They're a different, yeah, they're a bit different breed, the away lot. So, yeah, probably.
It was 50-50 though, right? I mean, it seemed like a lot of the fans were singing his name and a lot were deliberately silent. And I personally think I would have been one of the deliberately silent fans.
Well, Alex from Bristol was there and he WhatsApped during the game and he said that when Kane came out to warm up, he was pretty far away from the Spurs fans.
Mm.
I think it was Wolves' provocation, wasn't it? Because they started singing about him, so then we took defence of him and defence of the situation and tried to throw it back on them rather than, like, if the Wolves fans were silent and he just came on, I think it might have been a fairly different situation. And then maybe at home, it might be a fairly different situation. I don't know. It kind of feels weird to be jumping to his defence right now and trying to claim him and stuff like that.
Mm. Yeah, it's starting to look like the transfer might not happen after all. I do think this is his last chance to get this move to Man City because we know, you know, it's no secret that there are much better prospects than Kane available next summer. Younger prospects, cheaper prospects. So this is the moment for him. He's going to have to make this transfer happen or we might be stuck with him for life. And look, if he does end up staying, straight back in the team for you?
There'll probably be some kind of demonstration of non-existent loyalty. There'll be a look, I wanted the move, but I love the club and I'm really happy to be here and blah blah blah, and then he'll start and then he'll score and we'll forget about it completely. And it's kind of, so I don't know, we won't forget about it completely. He has tarnished his legacy. He'll still be appreciated, but I don't think it will ever be the same after this.
I agree, completely agree.
Because we've been through this big discovery of, like, we put so much on him, like we made him our talisman and we ascribed to him this relationship that once things are a bit up in the air, we start to go, well, hang on a second, he's never actually said these things that we pretend he said, or he said very little in the way of, like, how he feels about the club. He said very little in terms of, I mean, we've already had this conversation, haven't we? But I don't know. He would have to like do some making up. He would have to win us the league and get the badge, right? Yeah. And then it's fine. And then that was just a little blip. Wasn't there a thing with Gerrard where he was, or maybe it only came out after the fact, where he was sort of looking elsewhere, and then they devoted half a season to him and tailed off and did the big Steven Gerrard farewell tour and fell apart because they were celebrating him so much. So I don't know. Maybe we'll do that. I don't know.
Let's hope not. I must admit, I'm getting a little nervous about the outgoing transfers. So I've been quite clear that from the start of the window, I wanted our transfers out sorted ASAP. I wanted, you know, Aurier, Sissoko, and others gone ASAP.
Get out of my club.
Just like get the wages off the bill, get it done, create space for new players to come in. And it's really annoying that Sissoko and Aurier have yet to move. I hope they will, but we'll see. We know that it seems like Spurs have got a deal for Pape Matar Sarr from Metz lined up. But as Nathan mentioned earlier, he's been loaned back for the year, so we won't see him until the following season. But that seems like a good move. Aside from that, the big news is Adama. So I put a poll out on the Extra Inch Twitter. Adama, yes or no? And the no's took it. 55% no.
Close.
Bardi, should we sign Adama Traore?
Adama Traore is my favourite player to watch that's not at my club. He's an incredible individual. He's an incredible footballer. You can't defend him. If there's a football pitch behind you, that you're done. As Vertonghen said, that if there's space behind you, he's going to do you. And that's great to watch. But I'm not sure I could watch him do what he kept doing against us, for us. Destroying our fullback, destroying the centre-back, and then just nothing happening. I think he would be a great distraction tool. He would cause absolute chaos. I think he's an incredible substitute to bring on when people are tired. I think he offers us something, but I'm not sure that's something that I want and or something that we need. I'd like us to play a bit more possession based, and I don't think Adama gives us that those skills.
Yeah, I must admit that's the concern for me. It's the what that signing means for us tactically, and I think it basically confirms our deepest fears, essentially, about how we play this season. Nathan, it's £40 million is the talk. The idea would be that we would structure it as a loan so that we pay the £40 million next season. He is seen as a right winger. We currently have Lucas playing on the right, but we also have Bergwijn, who we know can play on the right. Son has played on the right for us. We've signed Brian Heal, who can play on the right. Do we need Adama Traore?
I mean, if you're looking for right-sided width, there is no more width to give than that is given by Adama Traore. Like, he will suck an entire team all the way over to him on the touchline if that's what he wants to do. So that would certainly take care of that demand. Like, as you alluded to earlier, I'm kind of a little bit obsessed with Adama Traore because he is maybe the most unique footballer ever. He truly is one of a kind. In the fact that he, like dribbly wingers who don't have much end product are kind of like a dime a dozen, but like he's so extreme in every regard that I can't like stop. You laughing because I said suck off or something? Did I say
something? No, I just completely agree with you that I can't stop watching Adama Traore. I can't stop watching him, and I really, really like him. But it just, I'm not sure those are qualities that make him a good footballer.
The thing is, it's like, okay, under Pochettino, people are like, should we sign Adama Traore? And I think, well, no, because what I tweeted the other day, what we're talking about Wolves and their new manager is that, like, they are playing Adama Traore football because they have to, because that's what he does to your team, right? You pass the ball to him, he dribbles past seven players, and then you do what you can to, like, take advantage of that opportunity as best you can. That is the football that you play when you have Adama Traore, right? And it's like, when we played more systemic football, when we had more of a possession model, Adama would have sort of torn that up. But Nuno, strangely enough, looking back at Wolves, like, Adama and Nuno are kind of a good fit, right? Because you're playing direct attacks, and you're trying to, you know, make things happen super fast with that. Well, there's Adama Traore. The thing with that is that, like, he did well at Wolves under Nuno. He put up sort of up towards between 0.2 and 0.3 expected assists per 90. Very little in the way of goals. What's interesting, and we are working on a sample of literally two games, but under the new manager, he's playing more central and he's absolutely getting the shots off. So he has more in terms of key passes. He's putting up 5 shots per 90, which puts him in there with like the greatest strikers ever. Like Carrie Kane gets like above 5 when he's fit. And obviously he's not a great finisher. In fact, obviously he's a bad finisher, but like there comes a point just in talking to pure numbers here where like just putting up the raw shots and getting the chance to sky them, half of them, you're still going to like create a lot for yourself. And it's like the more dangerous a position he's doing those dribbles, like he literally, he's one-on-one with Hugo Lloris. He's the greatest one-on-one player ever. He shoots, right? It's like you can get him into situations. And I feel like that we, talking about Nuno, we're talking about what our plans of him, we're not going to do this, but maybe we will start to clock on that, like, he literally, in a way that is in no way similar to any other footballer ever, he could dribble it into the goal. He really could dribble it into the goal. And I think that that is something that, like, that there's an upside there that's unexplored. Obviously, there's the upside of, like, what if you take this, like, ridiculous athlete and put him into a team where there's Kane and their son to take advantage of the space that he creates? Good. Yes. Okay. That makes sense. That's a reasonable argument. 40 million is maybe a bit much for that kind of risk. We just want Brian Heal. We have Lucas. We have Bergwijn. Why do we need 12 wingers at the club at all times? I'm not sure. But there's also this, like, what if we tried, we did that, but also we tried some other things. What if we looked at, like, Adama Traore is what he is, which is, like, a total outside of football enigma, and stop looking at it as, like, hell, he can dribble it down the wing and cross it in like wingers do. What if we start to look at him as more of an innovation, as an outlier, and stop trying to, like, put him into an existing football box and start saying, what can we do that is different to what everyone else is doing with this footballer who is different to every other footballer, and just get him to run at centre-backs again and again and again and again, and he'll probably win a lot of penalties, except that the fouls won't be given because you grab onto Adama Traore and you grab him by the arm and he's covered in baby oil and you dislocate his shoulder because he has a shoulder dislocation issue, but he carries on running and the ref doesn't give a penalty. Anyway, that's beside the point. I think that, like, there's this unexplored upside with the Del Mitrore, and I think that Nuno has failed to take advantage of it so far. But I would be really interested, because I think that there's there's a big unknown with the Del Mitrore that is really clearly fascinating to me. Or we could just put him on the right and he can provide width and do bad crosses 100 times a game.
Nathan, you've just, at the very end of that very eloquent soliloquy, you've said the point that I was going to make, which is, if it were a different manager, I think the 40 million risk would be a lot more sort of acceptable. But it's Nuno. He's already had him for a long period of time. He's already had an opportunity to try things with him. He's already tried to do different things, play him in different positions, and he's not got much out of him. So I would have serious doubts about whether he can get much more of a tune out of him at Spurs, even with better players.
Got 9 assists in the 1920 season.
Yeah, so I had a look at the expected numbers for the 1920 season, and his numbers, expected assists and goals per 90, are marginally better than Bergwijn, Lamella and Lucas's numbers. Marginally better.
Right, but he's obviously doing more on top of that. Like, he's doing the other bits as well. Like, he's putting up, like, okay squad number, like, goals and assists, and he is creating an entirely different game with his ability to draw the entire opposition towards him all times.
Sure, but is he doing the defensive work that Lucas and Lamella, for example, do as well? Like, they do other things. Bergwijn does other stuff as well. In 2021, his numbers were slightly worse than all of our players. I'm not saying that you're wrong. I think, like, there is potential for someone to get hold of Adama and turn him into something better than what he is. But at this point in his career, I'd be really, really surprised if it's Nuno Espirito Santo. And I also just think that 40 million, when times are tight, is better spent elsewhere. And frankly, if we're going to buy someone's play on the right, buy Noni Madueke, whose upside is, I think, even higher than the Dharma's. I think Madueke is going to be a star. Get sure. him in now while he's affordable. But, like, personally, I'm using that money to make the central midfield work if Ndombele's leaving. I'm using it to buy a top-draw right-back. I'm using it to buy a partner for Romero. And I'm just accepting that Lucas is our right winger for the season and rotating him with Bergwijn and Heal and whoever else.
I agree. From a squad building point of view, I agree. I think that money is better placed, generally improving the squad in the areas that it needs improving. But from a tactical point of view, I'm kind of in a, like, yeah, you know, screw it. Let's just throw the dice and try the Adama thing. So I'm kind of happy either way.
It would be really fun to watch him play for us.
I think this is a proper dice roll. We've got to the final week of the transfer window. We're not gonna go out and buy a right back. We're not going to go out and buy a centre midfielder that's going to change the style of play. If we're going to do a counter attack, I'd rather Adama was tearing up the pitch than Lucas. And I think it's come down to that.
That is
to
the
that
thing.
Simple fact.
We do have Lucas, who is like less than Adama. He's like half an Adama in every regard.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Like, the one time Lucas seems to have had a really good preseason, had a great first game against Man City, seems to have established himself. Then the rumours are we're trying to sign a player to replace him, who basically does what he does, but better. Poor old Lucas. Trayton says, with Romero, Heal and perhaps Saar joining the club this window, how do you all rate the age profile of this squad? What are the odds that a couple of seasons from now we'll look at this window as the first step in a major youth movement? And I thought this was an interesting question, actually. We've moved on some of the older players, Advarelde and Joe Hart being the really obvious ones. And we're expecting also Sissoko to leave, which will bring down the age profile yet again. Luis, you'd think, would only have one or two more years max at Spurs. And it does seem like we're kind of bringing the age profile down, which is, it was becoming an area of concern under Mourinho.
Desperately needed.
Yeah, you think that's something that's crucial, Nathan?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is that, like, we had this young squad before. It got older, and then Mourinho came in and sort of did this, like, buying players for now thing. He did this, mm-hmm. like, under him, we did this, you know, loaning in old man Bale, bringing in, you know, post-peak Doherty, that kind of stuff, to be like, let's go and win the league this year. And that, obviously, that didn't happen. What would have been better long-term squad building would have been to buy younger players then, but that wasn't the focus at the time. We you know, we talked about it obviously a lot at the time, but this idea that like we had this really good squad, we just needed that little final push for the big trophy. That isn't where we were. So yes, we need to buy young players this summer. We need to buy young players next summer. We need to buy young players the summer after that. We need to not sign like Sissoko onto a contract extension in 2019 and that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. There's been some weird squad building decisions over the last few years, but whatever.
It does kind of smell of that kind of Frank Arneson, Martin Jol early era where we just went out and we signed Carrick, Dawson, Lennon, Huddleston, all in the same kind of couple of windows and just got rid of a few older players, like booted out Dean Richards, Jamie Redknapp and the rest of them. So I do get that kind of vibes from Paratici and the rest of them.
Yeah, and I'm definitely getting the vibe that they're more willing to use youth players to fill out the squad than late Pochettino and Mourinho. And I think that's the right thing to do as well. Like, Nigel John, I think, could absolutely be a squad player over the next few seasons. We know Skip will be. And there are others as well. You know, we've seen Maxim Pascocci come from nowhere and suddenly become someone who's getting games for our first team. And there are others too. You know, there's some good young players there, and that's the right thing to do, to use them as the squad fodder and not sign Moussa Sissoko, basically, or Matt Doherty. Let's end with this one from Matt Smith, who says, having watched the Romero analysis finally, I'm slightly less concerned about the passing ability of Romero than I was, but do you think the fact that he may not be brilliant is a massively limiting factor in the potential for a Romero-Sanchez partnership?
Yes.
So, yeah, this is an issue, isn't it? So, Bardi, you're all in on the Romanchez, as you're calling it. Yep. But Sanchez has, I would say, quite major limitations on the ball. He's not a good footballer. He's a defender. He's a real defender's defender. Like, he wants to be up against the player and have personal battles with them. He's not good when he's got the ball at his feet. And it seems like Romero is much the same. He's quite a sort of rough and ready player. Perhaps can do a bit more than Sanchez. Perhaps bring it forward into midfield more than Sanchez. But he's not someone that's going to play Alderweireld's breaking passes, which, to be honest, with this setup, we kind of need.
Yes, that's it.
Any concerns, so, Bardi?
No. Yes and no. Of course I'm concerned, but I mean, it would be useful if he could whack a ball 40 yards straight into someone's head. That would be really very useful. Of course it would. But I don't think it really matters at the moment how we've set up. He's a good defender. Sanchez is a good defender. And Sanchez doesn't go tearing into midfield and try and take on Ruben Neves and when he's the last man. So I think Sanchez is a bit more conservative than Dyer, which is probably why I think he'll work quite nicely with the wonderful Romero, who I totally love.
I do wonder if that was why we were linked with Connor Cody, though. I mean, Cody is not the best player, really not, but he has got a pass on him. And like, our tactics seem to demand the ability to sort of release the wide players with quick balls over the top. Yeah, we'll see how the centre-back situation works out. I'm still not convinced that Sanchez is a long-term option for us. I think we've seen enough of Sanchez now to know that he's never going to be an elite centre-back. Of course, I don't think that of Dyer either. I think they're both fine, but nothing special. It's difficult to get a handle on the Rodon situation right now because he's been injured, so we've not got a feel for where he falls in the pecking order. I'd like to think that we get to see some Rodon and Romero at some point. And then, of course, you've got Tanganga, who has been playing right back, but is a potential centre-back option too. So we shall see.
My memories of those days. Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.